verses 5 through 10 of the fifth chapter of Ephesians. Ephesians chapter 5 through 10. This will sort of set the pace for our discussion of being an example. For this you know, and I guess I should mention, I read from the New King James Version. For this you know, that no fornicator, unclean person, nor covetous man, who is an idolater, has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. Let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of these things the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. Therefore, do not be partakers with them. For you were once darkness, but are now light in the world. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the Spirit, that may not be in your text, it's in the King James and the New King James, is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth, finding out what is acceptable to the Lord. These verses introduce the idea of what we ought to be as Christians, and it surrounds the topic of light versus darkness. But before I go back into that discussion, which really goes back to Jesus Christ himself, I did again what I did for my talk last night, went back to Webster's Dictionary, and it brought out exactly what Brother Robert mentioned just a few moments ago before I got up here, that examples are about both good and bad. Here's what Webster says. One, and it's talking here of the person, one that serves as a pattern to be imitated or not imitated. A good example or a bad example. And it's interesting that it's right in the definition of the term example in the dictionary. A pattern either to be imitated or not to be imitated. And we're going to look at both good and bad examples in order to get our points across today. Of course, we should seek to be the good example. And as our text said, and here again, Paul is going to bring us back to Jesus himself. As the text said and reminded us to do, walk as children of light. Walk as children of light. That's, of course, how we're going to set the example. As Christians, we're all supposed to be in progress. We're being transformed into Christ-likeness. At least that's what it should be like. And the key passage on that, I think, is 2 Corinthians 3:18. Where the Apostle Paul said, beholding as a mirror the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image from glory to glory. Probably means from degree to degree. We are growing, and if we are being transformed, it ought to be able by others to be seen in our lives. It ought to be able to be seen in us. If we are being transformed. And, of course, that becomes the basis then being an example. Now, we're told by Jesus that we are the light of the world. That's in the Sermon on the Mount, remember, Matthew 5:14. Remember he said, a city set on a hill cannot be hid, neither do men light a lamp and put it under a bushel, but on the table. And even so, let your light so shine that men may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. So light is one of the key terms that suggests what we ought to be. And in being light, that automatically functions as an example because we shine. So anyway, this then becomes the source of what we're talking about when we talk about example. Now, it's interesting, Jesus said in John 8:12, he said, I am, and I would emphasize it this way, I am the light. He said to his disciples, ye are the light of the world. You are light, but Jesus said, I am the light of the world. In John 8:12, he said, he who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life, the light of life. That's a very important concept. And it goes back, ahead to John 14:6, where Jesus said that I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes unto the Father except by me. I am the way, the truth, and the life. What is light? Light is the knowledge of the truth that shows you the way to life. We usually equate, because of a number of passages, some of which we've already seen, equate light in its use this way with knowledge, but primarily. But it's a knowledge, of course, that saves us. And this is what is so vital about light of life that Jesus said that he was. It's a light that ultimately leads us to life eternal. So we are to possess that light. That knowledge of the truth is, of course, what we have to have if we're going to have the light. We're going to have that knowledge of the truth. And it ought to be able to be seen in us. To me, one of the most striking passages is in the 12th chapter, the first few verses of Romans, with regard to this very idea. This one starts out, remember, I beseech you, brethren, by the tender mercies of God, to present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your perfect service, reasonable service, not worship. Maybe that probably got by there, but there used to be a controversy about translating that worship so that every action's worship, you know. But anyway, going to verse 2, he said, and be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is the good, acceptable, and perfect will of God. What does he mean by that when he says that you may prove what is the good, acceptable, perfect will of God? Prove it in yourself. You're not being conformed to this world. You're being transformed by the renewing of your mind. Otherwise, it's talking about what I am becoming. And so people ought to be able to look at me and see the good, perfect will of God operating in me. So I prove by the fact that I'm being transformed and it's becoming a part of me, the perfect will of God. Now, Paul, of course, affirms that we are light bearers, which have already suggested Christ is the light. We bear light. And Paul picked it up with Ephesians 5:8, which we saw, where he said, you are light in the world. Well, Jesus said, you're the light of the world. And now Paul says, you are light in the world, he tells the Ephesians. And in Philippians 2:15, this is a very well-known passage along this line, that you may become blameless and harmless children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation. This calls attention, of course, to the fact that we live in the world. Jesus said that in me you have peace, but in the world you have tribulation. We have to live in the world. We have to get along in the world as Christians. And yet we are to be light in this world. And we're to be without fault in the midst of this crooked and perverse generation. He said, in whom you shine as lights in the world. In the generation of the generation in the world, you shine as lights. That's what we're supposed to do. And the very next phrase said, holding forth, maybe I ought to pick this up, holding forth the word of life. Because that indicates, again, that if I'm light, and I act and function as a light in this world that is described as a crooked and perverse generation, I do that through, again, the knowledge of the Word. The light is that knowledge of the Word that leads to life. So what this begins to say then is that we are not only light possessors or bearers, we're also to be light transmitters. We're to transmit that light, holding forth the word of life. And we can do that, of course, in our teaching and by our example of what we are. We become examples. And therefore, we are light transmitters as well as light possessors or bearers. And we share the light with the world. We're in a world of darkness. We need to shine as a light. Now, we should care, as a matter of fact, then in connection with this, we should care, it should be a concern about what people think of us. Sometimes we hear people say, I don't care what people think. You know, we're talking about our brethren sometimes, or Christian. I don't care what people think. And I guess I've gotten that way sometimes. I, you know, get disgusted, you get down, something's happening, you know, and you come up and say, well, I don't care what people think. But Paul tells us we should. And it was already implicated, an implication of what we've been talking about. But in Ephesians 5:15, going a little bit further on in that fifth chapter that we began with, he said, see then that you walk circumspectly. There's a nice big word there, New King James. But it means carefully. Circumspectly. Walk carefully, not as fools, but as wise. And of course, Jesus said essentially the same thing. Let your light so shine that men may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. Matthew 5. But in Matthew 10:16, and he sent out his disciples into what we've called the limited commission, he said, be as wise as serpents, but as harmless as doves. It does matter what you act like, the impression that you give people. And we'll come back to this a little bit later when we talk about the tendency maybe to be ashamed as to who we are. Not let our light shine because we're a little bit ashamed. But let's move on, though, and see that Jesus, as in everything else, is our prime example to follow. In Matthew 16:24, and I used this last evening, and I believe that Darwin Hunter did also, if anyone desires to come after me, Jesus said, let him take up his cross, deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. Follow Jesus. And if you're going to be his disciple, if you're going to come after him, then you've got to be a follower of Jesus. He is our example. Remember at the last discourse that he made at the Last Supper, he washed his disciples' feet, recorded only by John in John chapter 13. But after washing the disciples' feet, he said, for I have given you an example. Jesus gives examples. We're to follow him. And he said that you should do as I have done unto you. And the apostle Paul took Christ as his example. And then he got people to follow him and his example. Because he does follow the example of Christ. That rather seemingly complicated statement, though, is found in 1 Corinthians 11:1. And we'll look at it again a few times, but it says, imitate me, Paul said. Imitate me just as I also imitate Christ. He would not want you to imitate him other than the way he, and in which cases he imitates Jesus Christ. Now, there are several other statements along this line, and I don't even exhaust them, use them all. But in Ephesians 5, 1 and 2, notice this statement. Therefore, be imitators of God, he tells the Ephesians, as dear children. God's our Father, we're the children, and we become children through Jesus Christ, adopted into the family. And then he said, walk in love, as Christ also has loved us and given himself for us. One of the few passages, I think I only know of three, that specifically mention that Christ loved us enough to come and die for us. We usually think of John 3:16, for God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son. And that is a great passage and important. God's love is discussed by John in 1 John in connection with the giving of Christ. But here's one of the few passages, another one that I think is Revelation 1:8, where it says, not only did God love us and send his Son, Christ loved us and gave himself up for us. Out of love, he died on the cross for us. But we're to walk in that kind of love. He's our example. That's the point of Ephesians 5, 1 and 2. Then in 1 John 2:6, he who says he abides in him ought also to walk just as he walked. The actual context is probably God, but there's no real difference between imitating God and Christ. We see God through Christ. No one has seen God at any time, but he who is in the bosom of the Father has declared him, exegeted him. John 1:18, I think, or 16. I don't even remember the passages. And so we're to walk as he walked. If we say we abide in him, if we say we belong to him, we need to walk as he walked. Follow the example. And of course, Jesus, when it came to the subject of suffering, Peter talked about Jesus as an example in the famous 1 Peter 2:21. For to this you were called, he said, because Christ also suffered, leaving you an example that you should walk in his steps. Walking in the steps of Jesus is following him as an example. And of course, the whole background of 1 Peter is that these Christians were suffering, probably as a result of the persecutions going on in Rome under Nero, who burned Rome, blamed the Christians, persecuted them in Rome and its environs. But it encouraged some other leaders further out in Asia, for example, and Asia Minor, as we call it, to exercise some persecution against some Christians. But in any case, both Hebrews and 1 Peter are written against the background of Christians who were facing suffering. They needed to follow Christ as an example. And in Hebrews 12:2, those who were suffering were told in this rather terse statement, that's all I need from Hebrews 12:2, looking to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. Look to Jesus, our example. Walk in his steps. Follow him. This is what we should do as our prime example. But also we are told in the process of this subject of being an example, how we are to be an example, and especially there are special people that are singled out in the New Testament that need especially to be examples. The first one, the preacher. He's to be an example. And so I have to talk about myself. And Maxie is going to have to, and Robert. 1 Timothy 4:12 is, of course, one of the primary examples. And let me read this to you. It says, let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the believers in these ways, in word, in conduct, in love, in faith, in purity. You know that I'm a preacher. That applies to me. Well, all except the first part that says, let no one despise your youth. That doesn't apply to me. But the other does. And I am to be an example. Preachers are. In 2 Timothy 3:10, Paul said, but you carefully followed my doctrine. He's talking to Timothy, of course. And Timothy looked to Paul as an example, a young evangelist, young preacher. He said, you carefully followed, not just followed, but carefully followed my doctrine, my manner of life. That is what I taught as doctrine and the way I live, my manner of life, my purpose, faith, long-suffering, love, perseverance. Timothy followed all of that. And the implication of all this is that And this will be repeated several times in some of these verses. The implication is always that if I have learned from someone like Paul, if I have learned, then I become an example to others also. This is the idea. It's a kind of a chain thing. That's what these passages bear out. Titus 2:7, talking to another evangelist. In all things, showing yourself, Titus, he is saying, to be a pattern of good works in doctrine, showing integrity and reverence. Showing it. Because he's an example. He is to be an example as a preacher. And I don't want to exhaust them all, but there's so many to show you the emphasis on example, how important it is. Paul has several other passages that deal with it. Philippians 3:17. He says, brethren, join in following my example. He tells the brethren generally. And he says, and note those who walk as you have us for a pattern. Follow me, and there are others you can follow, and you can have us as a pattern to follow. Imitate good Christians is the idea. those who are living the right kind of life and seeking to carry out the will of God, they can be examples because they're reflecting Christ. And they'll reflect Christ for you, and you can reflect Christ to others. Walk as you have us for a pattern, a tupos, a pattern to be followed. Then there's Philippians 4:9, where he says the Philippians, and watch how much of it, what's involved in example here. The things which you learned and received and heard and saw in me, these things do, and the God of peace will be with you. They had received things from Paul, learned things from Paul. They had seen things in Paul, heard things that Paul taught. And really, teaching is an example too. You're setting an example by your teaching as well as your own personal conduct, and we'll see how important that is. When Paul was among the Thessalonians, one of the problems that he ran across there was some people who would not work. They wanted to eat, but they would not work. And in 2 Thessalonians, he comes back to the subject. He raised it first in 1 Thessalonians. And in verse 7, beginning of that third chapter of 2 Thessalonians, he said this, "For you yourselves know how you ought to follow us," meaning Paul and those associated with him, "for we were not disorderly among you, nor did we eat anyone's bread free of charge, but worked and labored and toiled night and day that we might not be a burden unto you." Not because we don't have the authority to do it, but he goes on. Here's what he says. Have the authority to make our, let me say it again. Not because we do not have authority, but to make ourselves an example of how you should follow us. Notice how the word follow is often used with the word example, because that's how an example functions. You follow the example set before you, the pattern that is set before you. And again, he could talk this way to the Thessalonians because of 1 Corinthians 11:1, imitate me as I also imitate Christ. Follow us, imitate us, do the way we do. And now there's another group beside the preachers who knew to be an example. You know, I think, who they are, the elders. They come in too. 1 Peter chapter 5. And here, of course, is probably the best passage along this line. Let me just read the first three verses with you from 1 Peter 5. He said, "The elders who are among you I exhort, who am a fellow elder and a witness of the suffering of Christ, also a partaker of the glory that shall be revealed. Shepherd the flock which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion, but willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly, not as being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock." Elders, in a special way, need to be examples to the flock over which they are shepherds and overseers. And of course, he goes on to say, when the chief shepherd appears, who of course is Jesus Christ, you'll receive the crown of glory that does not fade away. But in Hebrews chapter 13, I think he's also talking about elders. In verse 7, when he says this, "Remember those who rule over you, who have spoken the word of God to you, whose faith follow, considering the outcome or the issue of their conduct." And again, the very next verse says, "Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever." You can follow them because they follow Christ, and Christ will always be the same. He doesn't change. And that becomes also the pretext for verse 9. Don't be carried away with various and strange doctrines. Why? Because Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. But elders do have this special responsibility. And then as we look around in the scriptures, I found over another one, a class over in 1 Timothy chapter 2, about women. And here it's implied about their dress. He had said in verse 8, I desire therefore that men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting and so forth. In like manner also, that women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair or gold or pearly or costly clothing, but which is proper for women professing godliness with good works. Certainly suggesting an idea of serving as an example by the way they dress. And along with, of course, their good works that they should... And this is the kind of woman that is upheld in the Bible naturally. And in 1 Peter 3, we have an additional idea when you have this rather unusual statement. It said, wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives. Wives' conduct. This presupposes, of course, a wife who's a member of the church and the husband that isn't. And you're trying to gain him for Christ. And even if he's not influenced by the word that you might speak, the conduct, the example you set, might well lead him to Christ. I think I've known some examples of that in my own ministry over the 50 years now that I've been at it. Max has been a little bit longer than that. But in those 50 years, you get all sorts of things. I also know why some men didn't obey the gospel, even though their wives were members. I've been in their homes and not in there 5 minutes, and she starts nagging him. Right in front of the preacher, you know, starts nagging him, berating him, and say, oh, well, this is not what you told me, and so forth and so on. No wonder he doesn't obey the gospel. But anyway, all of us are included, of course, in the general statements we saw about being examples. Every Christian is to be an example. We were just looking at some special cases. But in Hebrews 6:12, all of us are encouraged this way: imitate those who through faith and patience inherit the promises. That's for all of us. Let me talk for a few minutes about the harm of a bad example or bad examples. In 1 John, you have a very interesting statement where John says in 1 John 3:11, and we'll talk about what led up to it. Beloved, he said, do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. When you're looking at examples, don't imitate the evil, but the good. And in 1 Thessalonians 5:21, it sounds similar to what Paul said when he said, prove all things, hold fast to that which is good. Know the difference between good and bad. Imitate the good, not the bad. Now what led up to this, of course, in verses 9 and 10 of 3 John, is the famous figure Diotrephes, who loved to have the preeminence among us. And he would not receive John the Apostle at all. And he said, therefore, if I come, I'll call to mind the deeds which he does, prating against us with malicious words. And not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren, and forbids those who wish to, putting them out, casting them out. Bad example, Diotrephes. But the good example is down in verse 12. Demetrius, he becomes the good example. Demetrius has good testimony from all and from the truth itself. And we also bear witness, and you know that our testimony is true. I believe, Robert, you wrote an article on these two men, a very excellent article, on Diotrephes and Demetrius, the good example. And some, as I saw with you last night in the third chapter of Philippians, in verses 18 and 19, there were some who were called the enemies of the cross of Christ, whose God was their own belly, who were self-centered individuals. And they, of course, are the bad examples not to be followed. A person who is an enemy of the cross of Christ, you know, in that context, and what I was talking about last night, why were they enemies of the cross of Christ? And to me, the answer is simply this. The cross of Christ is a symbol of the greatest humility and lack of self-centeredness in the universe, the best example of it. The cross illustrates unselfishness to the degree that you and I can never match up to. And if you are selfish yourself, you're an enemy of that cross, enemies of the cross of Christ. At least that may be on the surface. But there are others. In Titus 1, 10 and 11, there are those setting a bad example in their teaching conduct that he said their mouths have to be stopped. And in Romans 2, 24, Paul had talked about certain Jews whose God is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of their conduct, their example. And in 2 Peter 2, 2, about certain false teachers, he said, many follow their destructive ways. Notice they're being followed as an example. But he says here, many follow their destructive ways because of whom the way of truth will be blasphemed. Not only is that true of the Jews in Romans 2, 24, but it's true of certain Christians who are causing the way of truth to be blasphemed because of their conduct. Along with their teaching. Of course, not being a bad example means more than not doing bad things. It means positively, of course, living out what it means to be the light of the world, the light bearer, because Christ is the light, to live as we ought to live. A bad example is not only through our conduct. We've been suggesting this all along. It also comes out, you remember, in things we might teach. And Paul was so worried about that when he talked to the Ephesian elders in Acts chapter 20 and verses 29 and 30. He knew that after his departure, grievous wolves would enter in among the flock, not sparing it. Many would follow them, you see, again. You have that bad example always as a threat, false teaching being, in this case, what that threat is to the welfare of the church. And in 2 Timothy 2:17 and 18, Hymenaeus and Philetus, out of their example, they're denying the resurrection, saying it's already past. They've overthrown the faith of many because they follow their example, the example of their teaching in particular. And a bad example can spread. This was true at 1 Corinthians 5:6, where a man was guilty of sexual immorality. It was a really bad, serious case, and they were tolerating it. And he said, you know, not know that a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump. It spreads. Paul used that same figure in Galatians 5:9 against the Judaizing teachers who were trying to go back to a type of Christianity, to go back to a type of view of law where you earn your salvation. But it was spreading. If it's unchecked, that kind of bad example, it can do harm to the faith. It can do harm to the cause of Christ, the bad examples. Well, we have all heard the expression, of course, actions speak louder than words. You may also have heard the idea, I can't hear what you say because I see what you do. And you may talk one way and behave, of course, another. The best sermon, of course, is a good life. I think Edgar Guest was quoted about that yesterday morning, a little bit different, but the same idea that he said he would rather see a life rather than hear a sermon. See a good life which functions as an effective sermon, an example that people can follow. We possess, many of us, kind of an instinctive fear of being different. If you're a Christian, you are different. And when you're out in the world, of course, the world is likely to persecute you in one way or another. I don't necessarily mean with violence. There are different ways to persecute. They can badmouth you, give you a bad publicity, make snide remarks, ostracize you, things like that. But they are more likely to persecute those that do not conform to the pattern of the world. We're different. We're to set an example, but a lot of people don't like us. And we have to put it down and live with that. But we should not be ashamed to be a Christian. And there's a remarkable reference to this in 2 Timothy chapter 1 in three separate verses where the Apostle Paul is talking about this very thing. He says, and of course this is 2 Timothy, he's in prison and probably for the last time before he loses his life. But here's what he says, do not be ashamed of the testimony of the Lord, nor of me, his prisoner. For this reason I also suffer these things. Nevertheless, I am not ashamed. And then he said, the Lord grant mercy to the household of Onesiphorus, for he often refreshed me and was not ashamed of my chain. Those are verses 8, 12, and 16. Three times, don't be ashamed. He wasn't ashamed, and so forth. And yet, there is, I say, this almost instinctive desire when we're different and stand out to sort of shy away and maybe even be ashamed. Yet, if anyone suffers, Peter told them in 1 Peter 4:16, as a Christian, not as a murderer and evildoer, but if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in this name. Don't be proud to be a Christian, to wear the name Christian. And don't worry about suffering as a Christian. Never be ashamed of it, but always stand up for it. Yes, there are good and bad examples. And you know some of them. I had several back in my mind. Contemporary, again, I was going to give, but I see the clock on the wall is showing my 45 minutes about up. Isn't that right? Yeah. So let me close with a poem. It's called Set a Good Example. You are writing a gospel, a chapter each day, by deeds that you do, by words that you say. Men read what you write, whether faulty or true. Say, what is the gospel according to you?